20th meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll?
Novick.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Hales.
Here. Okay, we have a single item on the calendar and actually another two items that we are postponing. I just want to again announce we are postponing items 1128 and 1129. They're actually being rescheduled for December 4th at 2 p.m. So and hope no one came on that those items today, but that's when they will be heard. So we have a single item to actually deal with today, and that's 1127. So would you read that, please?
1127, appeal of David Vandia against the noise variance granted to Anderson Construction for the Unico Overton apartment project located at the block bounded by Northwest 12th Avenue, Northwest Overton Street, Northwest 13th Avenue, and Northwest Pettigrove Street.
Okay, we have a schedule for how we will do this appeal. These are actually fairly rare events, but we have a process for that. We'll have a staff report. We'll give the appellant 10 minutes to come make the appeal case. Individual supporters of the appellant who have signed up, then followed by a principal opponent of the appeal, which in this case I think is the noise control officer. So again, this is sort of an unconventional process. It's not exactly like our land use appeal process. Followed by other opponents of the appeal, and then some opportunity for the appellant to have any rebuttal that 5 minutes would allow. Hopefully there won't be that much needed. But at any rate, we have this structure. We'll give you each of those time blocks and proceed at least roughly within those boundaries.
A question for Commissioner Fritz. And is this the first time we've had an appeal like this?
I don't remember another one when I've been on the council.
So I think this is the first in 6 years, so we're going to pay extra attention to this because this is not familiar territory.
Yeah, not for me either, so. All right. Well, with that, we'll ask our staff, our noise officer, Paul Van Orden, to make the staff report, and we'll take it from there.
Thank you. Members of the council, my name is Paul Van Orden. I'm the city's noise control officer within the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. Today before us, we have the appeal of a staff-reviewed noise variance. It is a variance down in the Pearl District for 261 Northwest Overton. The applicant was Anderson Construction. They're actually present today to talk a little bit about their application. And I just want to start off with a little bit of background. So I'm going to offer some orientation to the site we're speaking about, how noise variances operate in Portland since the last appeal we had was a Portland International Raceway variance appeal, and it's been a while. A little bit about the noise review board and the difference between staff-reviewed permits and board-reviewed permits. And outreach leading to this appeal, because I think it's an interesting situation with the way the noise office tries to work closely with the community when we see a growing concern in a given neighborhood. And then finally, just a specific note on the item that we're appealing today within the Anderson variance. The site that you see before you is the location that we're discussing right in the heart of the Pearl. It's located next to a number of additional construction projects that are currently happening. And the interesting component about the Pearl and one of the zoning maps that I'm going to show is that everything down in the Pearl District is industrially zoned for the purposes of Title 33 or for the noise code. And so that sets the tone during our review for an initial point of interest in how we're reviewing the variance relative to the permitted decibel levels within the code.
Paul, that's a somewhat older picture or map because I think there's now active construction on all the sites.
Yes. So within the city's mapping system, they take pictures, I think, on an annual basis, and sometimes the photos are even older than that. So this is using the standard available map works that I have at my desk. So most definitely, this does not do a great job of depicting all of the sites that are actively under construction. The next picture might show a little bit more that we have a lot of sites that are actively, and this point is still a little bit early in the phase, actively being constructed. Hard to find an exact angle or picture for the site that we're talking about. So if you're looking at this aerial photo, the Parker, the building that's in the right quadrant, the white building that's 6 stories tall, is right in front of the site that we're talking about, which would be behind this. And so for neighbors living in the Pearl, one of the interesting dynamics is that there is a lot of construction happening at the same time. And so within the confines of reviewing noise variances, we are definitely taking into account the unique geography and the unique demographics of how many people or what size population is potentially impacted by noise.
So this site is directly to the west of the Parker?
The site is south of the Parker.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so it would be, as a point of reference, I just made a note because I thought council might be more familiar with the Ramona and the Sitka.
Right.
And so this is two blocks north and one west of the Ramona, mm-hmm. or that the location is, and it's one block south and one block east to the Sitka from the location.
Yeah.
So located kind of in the center of a lot of housing in the Pearl. Mm-hmm.
Just the lot to the south of the Parker.
Yes, that's okay. Correct. So what I wanted to chat about briefly is within the dynamics of the city's noise code, the zoning for the property permits the highest permitted decibel level. So the chart from Title 18 that I have pulled up delineates on the left side of the chart, it delineates the source of noise, and in this case we would be talking about sound emanating from an industrial zone. And then at the top of the chart, if we go across to industrial, we see that the initial baseline that we're talking about is 75 decibels during the daytime. There are a number of correction factors in the code that would bring that down a little bit because we would be looking at a situation with pre-existing residential. But nonetheless, we are beginning the dialogue with a reference point to a zone that allows the highest decibel levels in the city.
Let me stop you there for a second because I was struck by that in the report. You're categorizing this as industrial, but it's EXD, right?
Yes, that's correct. So for the noise code, there are several zoning types that fall into our four main categories.
Mm-hmm.
EXD has historically, for I think the last 38 years, I don't know that it was originally EXD, it's transformed over time, but that type of zoning has been characterized in the code as an industrial type zoning, for just for decibel levels, not necessarily speaking to the land use elements of what uses are permitted.
Thank you.
So the next graphic is just a quick picture on the left of the Pearl, just helping to show a pretty unique situation in zoning in the city of Portland, where you have quite a large swath of EX zoning with a few open space locations, which are primarily parks, I think in this case are all parks. And on the right side, we see what is actually kind of more common for our office to interface is a more notably challenging situation in determining conditions for permits, one where the zoning is changing from block to block with a patchwork of EX, residential, some commercial CG zoning, and in the upper right corner I see a little bit of a OS zone, a park zone, and in that case that particular park is Irving Park, just as a reference point. So just wanted to show a little bit about the interesting dynamic of zoning coming into play when we're reviewing the permits and trying to figure out what's appropriate based on who the neighbors are to the project. So I wanted to talk for a moment about our variances and just mention that in an average year, we're processing these days about 550 variances within the city. To date, calendar year 2014, we've processed 62 construction permits, 8 of which are for concrete pours similar to this project, and 14 are for mobilizing and demobilizing cranes outside of, and these construction permits are all outside of our construction hours of 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. So this would be work in the evenings, early mornings, and on Sundays. We have had 91 high-impact noise variances. These are just simply larger events like concerts and other functions that wouldn't be construction-oriented that have 250 people or more and actually raise the decibel level more than just a small event like a wedding would. Then interestingly, in the last year so far, we've had 5 noise review board variances. I'm going to chat a little bit about that later on the noise review board and how they function. On average, we see about 10, maybe 12 annually of these larger projects that occur. And so the noise review board projects are things like the Music Fest Northwest, repainting of the Broadway Bridge, the movement and restructuring of the Selwood Bridge, or Portland International Raceway. And then in the last year to date, we've had 398 additional noise permits that we've processed, which are minor events in parks, they're weddings, they're minor events that aren't in a park, a street fair, a concert that's not as large as the recent Pabst concert, which appeared before the Noise Review Board, running events, filming events, just about anything you can think of where someone wants to vary from the existing code language for the noise regulations for the city.
Well, why do we give construction variances at all?
Well, the concept for all the construction permits are that within the limitations of the code, our code is one of the more restrictive in the United States. We're currently under a process to review pile driver regulations in the city, and a handful of locations are more restrictive, mostly with Saturdays, it looks like right now. In a few cases, a little bit earlier in the morning, they push their start times back to 8. The confines of construction from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m., which is for, to be very specific, for commercial construction, if a homeowner is working on their house, they can actually work until 10 p.m., 7 days a week. But for the projects that are getting a noise variance, the concept is they're doing something that wouldn't be able to fit within those hours, so it may be something where PBOT or ODOT is requiring them to close the road, and they won't let them close during normal work days. It could be a matter of putting a crane up, and often for the crane operators in town, they find that it's a safer situation to work on a Saturday and Sunday and work more extended hours. And so they come in, they bring in a large piece of equipment when there's less people present to actually install a crane, for instance. It could be an emergency. Something's happened that's not technically shutting down utilities, but it's an urgent enough matter for the construction company that they're asking to do something outside the code to shore back up a situation or modify. So there are quite a few different reasons why we see applicants apply to operate outside the hours of construction. The concept of how does the processing of the noise variance effort work? There are a series of conditions within the code or criteria within the code that talk to physical characteristics, times and durations that the sound is emitted, the geography, the zoning, the population density, whether, very importantly, the public health, safety, or welfare is impacted by a given project, whether the sound source predates the receiver, whether compliance with the standard or provision which the variance is sought from would produce hardship without equal or greater benefit to the public by allowing the variance to happen. And a more recent condition that we've been able to add to the code, which has been a very powerful condition, is an applicant's previous history with past applications or performance in the city, which we've actually used in a number of different capacities to deny variances or revoke a variance.
And sorry to interrupt again, but for the criteria for review, it doesn't have any, it just lists a series of attributes. It doesn't say how you make that decision.
That's correct. So the challenge being that I would have to argue that whether it was my predecessor, Dr. Paul Herman, or myself, I think the city has placed a notable amount of reliance on the professional experience of the individual in this very unique job of being the noise control officer. So part of the reason why we're here today is the noise office has definitely encouraged the neighbors within the Pearl to raise their concerns. One of the ways is through the appeal process. So understandably, there is potential when you're reviewing these conditions that it's not a perfect science. And because noise is very, you know, technically challenging to navigate, that setting forth strict standards is probably not the best way to adapt to unique situations on each given project.
So, for instance, it says one of the criterions is the times and duration of the emitted sound. How do you evaluate whether you're going to give a variance for, say, noise on Sundays?
So this is a wonderful example in this particular case where if someone were to say, we want to jackhammer or we want to do something on a Sunday, and they were in close proximity to neighbors like we are in this case, they'd really have to show me a mitigating circumstance, like transportation will not allow them to work anything but a Sunday, or a factor that would delineate a necessity to work odd times or durations or in the middle of the night. In this particular case, the times and the duration that they're asking to work was fairly minimal in terms of a delivery. 10 times within a year of materials is probably going to happen for an hour or two at best, and it's not something that's normally allowed. And in fact, the two items that are in this particular variance for the Sunday operations are something that I would actually not anticipate would violate the city code, but within the spectrum of construction companies operating regularly in Portland, they're trying to be a good neighbor, and so they want to make sure, rather than risking that having a truck pull up and deliver on a Sunday would fit within the confines of the permitted decibel levels, they're usually very diligent about saying, is that something that would be reasonable to include in the other operations that we're exploring, such as concrete pours? So in this case, the times and durations are not a simple lone element. I'm looking at it also in terms of what are you looking to do during those times and durations. And if you're looking to make an enormous amount of noise, you need to have a very good argument for why you're looking to do that.
Paul, you may have already touched on this, or maybe it's to come, but what is our standard of review?
The standard of review is an applicant has, in this case, for staff review.
For us.
Oh, for you. You may modify. You may revoke. You have.
Do we? Because there haven't been a lot of these. Do we owe you deference, or is this our judgment based on the evidence in this hearing?
It is. You do not owe me deference. This is the right of the City Council to change, modify, revoke any of the conditions that I process.
So it's not an abuse of discretion or anything else. We get to hear the appeal and decide de novo whether we agree with your variance.
Yes, most definitely.
And, but as Commissioner Fritz noted, it seems that the criteria in the code has a lot of room for discretion, and we have, in essence, delegated to you in the first instance, using your good discretion.
Yes. Okay. Then back to a few other notes on noise variances. Past experience, I mentioned, is an important element of our review. We have many variances that are requested of the noise variance of the noise office where we actually dissuade an applicant from moving forward. So we may receive an application with a payment, and before we even process the payment, it would never even be a record for the city. We'll call up the applicant, or we'll sit down with them and explain why their request is outside of anything we would even process. So we feel that that's good business practices, so someone's not paying for a permit of that I'm just going to deny or put such restrictive conditions. So some of that gets hidden, that there's lots of things that would be not acceptable to anyone in the community. And then the last element is, since this was a staff-reviewed noise variance, if it's something that veers from what we've done historically, or if it's a tough call, I will often have a conversation with the chair of the Noise Review Board, because one of the important elements about the noise variance process is the chair of the Noise Review Board delegates authority to the noise control officer legally. So if this were to become an issue where the Noise Review Board thought I was operating out of reasonable judgment, they could start calling construction concrete pourers or Sunday work to the Noise Review Board. So there's an additional check and balance within the city code that empowers the citizens, the three citizens, the construction industry representative, and the acoustical engineer, who are the five members of the Noise Review Board, to start pulling noise variances back. So there's a kind of a de facto check and balance hidden in the code that may not be apparent necessarily at the front end. So I just wanted to also mention very briefly that variances are not a primary element for the Noise Review Board to have enforcement challenges on. The greater majority of our work chasing after noisemakers are folks who aren't the 550 people who are working with us. So it is rare that we have challenges that we can't bring into compliance. I think the Pearl is an interesting situation because we have so many projects happening at once that we have had some challenges this summer. So one of the things within the spectrum of trying to engage the public around this particular project is that once we recognized there were concerns around the noise that was happening in the Pearl, when this variance was processed, we had about, I think it was 25 or so folks who we knew had been vocal on our applications this year, or our variances in noise cases, and we reached out to them and said, we're processing this permit, we want to make sure you know what the conditions are, and we really want to make sure if you're unhappy with what we're approving that you know how to appeal. So in this particular case, before I talk briefly about the Noise Review Board, the appellant had the opportunity not only to appeal, but I sat down with him for 2 hours and helped go over the process and make sure that within good operations and good practices of ONI that I empowered the citizens, in this case, to appeal a decision that I made that I still feel is a very sound decision, but wanted to make sure the public was not just engaged but empowered to help utilize the system to question the decision that I've made. So today we have an appeal before us that was a staff review, but I wanted to mention very briefly because we may have some questions about why a project of this nature is not before the Noise Review Board. The Noise Review Board for the City of Portland, just as a side note, is a unique entity in the United States. It's the only entity that I can find a record of that actually directly empowers citizens to approve noise permits and engage noise projects that isn't just simply more of a decision-making body within the development entity of a city. Their focus is primarily on complex and lengthy construction projects like repaving, ridge reconstruction, things that last for an extended period that impact a large portion of the community. PIR is a big one for them because the sound carries so far and impacts so many citizens. And large concerts and events out in city parks and out in the street, like the recent Pabst Blue Ribbon concert, is one of the types of things you'd see before the board. So this is not something within the confines of the applications the board sees that the board would normally ask to review at their hearing. And one of the folks within the Pearl had actually raised this to the board at one of our recent meetings. Were you aware of this project? Are you reviewing it tonight? And what the chair of the board and the other members of the board said, this is a very normal affair for the noise staff to process this permit, and that's something that we would routinely expect to be processing at a public hearing, which normally the difference between staff review and noise review board in terms of notification, which will probably be a discussion from citizens today, is the noise review board is 45 days, business days, in order to process the permit. A staff review can be 10 days or less, so we often get someone coming in who parks as directed in our way that has 2 days before their event or 3 days before their event, or a construction company that's ran into a challenge that has a single day that they're trying to do something, and we have to look at that and balance it. So very big difference between noise review board, 45 days, public hearing, more extensive notification, and staff review, which is notably more quick and potentially has less of an ability to reach out to the public with the public notification side of the element. And the last thing I just wanted to note very briefly is the applicant before us today, or the applicant before us today from Anderson Construction, Brian Anthony, primarily was focused on filing an application for concrete pours, but within the work that we do, we try to work with the industry and not have them coming back again and again for a permit. So it's not a very good function for city staff or for the industry, businesses working within the construction industry, to constantly come back to us that we need to add a noise variance for crane operations. We need to add a noise variance for a element of the project that has just that we didn't foresee that's coming up in a few weeks. So as much as possible, we try to sit down at the front end. What that translates to, and I think you'll hear today from the construction company themselves, is that they work diligently to not work the off hours. And one of the reasons for that is it's an added cost for them. So working on a Sunday is not something that they're looking to do by any means. And one of the reasons when the auditor's office asked us if this was something that should be heard before council very quickly or would it be okay to hear it on today's date was that I checked with the construction company and we didn't have a perceived Sunday that we were going to be working. And since the appeal was focused on Sunday, it did not seem that it would be a logical noise variance that we would have a need to rush to review to ensure that there was not an impact on the community. So I think this is a classic example of staff trying to work with the industry to give them leeway so they're not coming back in. I think that Anderson Construction will report today that they are not scheduling any Sundays to date. They're trying to work not to do that. They may have something they have to deliver that they'll call me up and say, Paul, we have this large piece of equipment coming in. Would this be appropriate to do on a Sunday and use one of their 10 Sundays? So the interesting component that also partially gets hidden in the code is we're not trying to just give them 10 days. We look at the duration of the project and come up with a realistic number and try to work as best as possible to minimize their need to actually operate those 10 days. So I think one of the challenges, understandably, as a citizen, is if you see a permit, you probably run to the worst case scenario is, wow, I'm going to have 10 Sundays plus all these concrete pours. That doesn't seem like it's reasonable to do. I would argue two things. One, we're going to likely have less Sundays unless they run into some challenges. And two, that the particular operations that we're talking about today are quieter operations that, for the most part, a truck showing up and delivering, I can't really stop them from having a truck show up because it's not necessarily a construction operation. It's only the moments when they're offloading something from the truck. And the operation of installing cranes in Portland, in my 18 years as the noise control officer, I can only think of one instance where we've actually had notable complaints. So I would close by saying to council that this is an interesting philosophical element in terms of, do we want to make a change of this particular noise variance in order to recognize that neighbors should have a known day for having no construction work happening? Or do we feel that within the notable limitations of trying to do a complex construction project in a dense urban environment, that we think it's reasonable to have 10 Sundays? And I would say I'm comfortable with council making a decision either direction. I think they're both reasonable and logical ways to approach this particular variance that staff has administered.
Well, just curious, what's the statutory penalty for a first violation of a variance?
It's $200 for a variance itself.
And is it a sliding scale that goes up with each violation?
It goes up very quickly, so it starts to step up to 1,000, then 3,000, then 5,000. But the more interesting thing is, in cases, I'll give you a great example. Fred Myers is doing a project on West Burnside right now, and we administered a very similar noise variance to this one to Fred Myers, and they did not perform well under the noise variance. And so what wound up happening and transpiring in that case is you'll see within the conditions of the noise variance that I have quite a bit of leeway to revoke a noise variance. And so if a applicant gets my noise variance and they want to appeal and they feel uncomfortable with that, they could potentially be coming to council because they feel that the capacity of revoking a noise variance is not equitable or reasonable. But in this case, Fred Myers did not perform, and we actually revoked their noise variance and stopped their night construction from legally happening. And we're actually working with officers who are working at night to make special reports when they're working to delineate that if we're still having challenges. So one of the interesting components of the feedback loop of engaging the public is Fred Myers is a wonderful example. They're an entity that lots of folks in the city work with. We don't think they're unreasonable, but they weren't performing well on their noise variance, and we revoked the noise variance. And so that's one component that gets hidden a little bit in the system, too.
So in terms of the 10 Sundays, did I understand you correctly that they have to tell you when they want to work on a Sunday?
That's the expectation. I've never had a problem with that.
It's informal, though.
Right? But you keep a tally, and so when they're done with their 10, they're done?
They're actually required to keep the tally. And so we have had some challenges with that because within the confines of 550 permits in the city, a number of which require tracking the operations you're doing, when we have a case that has concerns from the public, we're obviously going to spend staffing and be more cognizant of a concern for impact on the community. So there's a couple layers of feedback. One is us watching more closely in a troubling location like the issues occurring in the Pearl currently. Another is that the feedback loop of citizens saying they worked again last night and we don't have a record of them working. And in that case, we're saying you really need to be telling us when you're using your variance days.
When they tell you that they're going to be using a variance day, do you put it into track it so that you could look up to see whether they've...
Not always. I mean, fortunately, with all the things we're tracking within the city, that's probably not in track it, or not track it, in tracks itself. It would be definitely captured as an email from the company, and I use email quite frequently because within the confines of staffing that's the same as 1976, I try to use technology as best as possible. Tracks is a very cumbersome program, and it's exciting that we're going to be moving on to ITAP very soon.
So there's no way to notify the neighbors that this is one of the 10?
There's an expectation. I think this permit actually required a construction hotline phone number that updates neighbors so someone can call in and see what's happening, what are they doing. And then also they're required to send complaint reports. So if a neighbor was having a problem and called in and said, what are you doing? Why are you working on a Sunday? They're also supposed to give us feedback. So,
well, I'm very cognizant that there's just you in the noise office. It's not like you have a bevy of folks. I mean, you mentioned officers working at Fred Meyer. Is that police officers?
That would be, in the case of Fred Meyer's, we had a special report from a police officer recently where they responded to a construction complaint about a generator operating in the middle of the night.
So unlike construction on lots where development services is responsible for enforcement, the police are responsible to help you with enforcement of noise variances?
Legally, the city attorney's office has determined within the city code it talks to duly authorized agents. So police officers most definitely can enforce the noise code, but because of the challenge sometimes of their concern that they can't take a noise reading, that we don't always get reports on every single case, but they definitely are empowered to.
Well, I know that when I was in charge of the Bureau of Emergency Communications, that was always a challenge that people would call with noise complaints, but they were so far down the list of the things that the officers were needing to respond to at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday that they often didn't get a good response. I think that that's something for us to look at moving forward is people should have a right to expect that at least what is supposed to happen and is being given a variance is happening, and how do we provide that mechanism both for reporting that's through us rather than through the construction companies, and then how do the police at least track those concerns?
So one of the notes I wanted to offer council is in our new location in Oney, we have some unique strengths that we didn't necessarily have at the Bureau of Development Services. So as we've become focused on how we can best utilize our new location at Oney, there are a few things that we're exploring changing that I think will be successful with changing. One is requiring a posting on a weekly basis on the internet, both on the noise website and then also an email out to folks such as the coalition offices, Parks Bureau, Police Bureau, liquor licensing partners who we work with from the liquor licensing team, to actually post the list of variances that we've received that week. It's a little cumbersome now with tracks until we get into ITAP to have every single permit instantly clickable and openable. But at a minimum, we've received feedback from the citywide land use group and from other entities within the coalitions that would be a wonderful place to start. So staff thinks that I'm not overcommitting for them, that we can accomplish that in terms of improving notification.
So on that lines, are they required to post on the fence the noise variance and a number to call?
They are not, but that's one of the things that I also noted that we do that on some projects, but we're looking to get more standardized that when a construction project is a week or more, that we'd actually have them just post the physical noise variance. The reason why I say that is, one, you'd have the hotline numbers on there to call the city or call the contractor, but also it's frustrating for neighbors not knowing exactly what was approved, and it's also frustrating for Portland police officers to respond, and it's a confusing matter. So even though every noise variance has a condition at the bottom that empowers Portland police to take action, they would be able to go to a condition, like let's say a condition about working on Sundays, and say, you guys are jackhammering. It doesn't look like the condition from the noise office says you can jackhammer on Sundays. So in the cases where they have time to stop, this would empower officers who are responding. So that's another thing that we're looking at, just requiring on every project that's a week or more. And then the last component that I think we're going to get closer to accomplishing as ITAP comes into place is the bigger question for, I think, our neighbors in the Pearl, which is addressing density. As the city's becoming dense, I don't think the noise office has been able to do a good job of perfectly quantifying or quantifying very effectively the impacts on the most dense neighborhoods of the city, whether it's the Pearl or it's Williams and Vancouver or it's Mississippi. So we are hopeful, and it's a focus for staff this year to get better acquainted with how to utilize mapping and how to best magnify the ITAP system as it goes into place to be able to answer questions that the public has currently about how many projects, why are you approving these, how many more are coming down the pike. So we're hoping that having that capacity to map would give us a better ability to serve the public.
Thank you. I'm certainly there's some system improvements. On this particular case, condition N of the variance says that if there's a complaint filed with the noise office that you can modify conditions to resolve the excessive noise conditions. Did that happen in this case, and have you modified any conditions? Why or why not?
We have not had complaints about the condition that's being appealed today. We definitely have some interesting challenges right now because there's so many projects operating at once that we still have some review to do of video footage and complaint information from citizens. So it's still very possible that based on some of the recent complaint information that's been coming in the last few weeks that we may be either issuing citations, modifying permit conditions, working with the contractor to find out why they've made mistakes and operated outside of the permit. So we've had some video footage we still have to process. So currently I haven't modified this permit.
And I'm not quite clear why we're hearing this appeal. Has it been to the noise board?
No, currently the way the city code is written, any appeal, it's been several years since we've had a staff appeal. I think the last staff appeal was a gentleman who was unhappy with some grammar school students who were having a band rehearsal of all odd things. And so very rarely do we see an appeal of staff variances. So the system is not currently set up to take a staff appeal to the noise review board. The interpretation of code is that would come to city council currently. So that is definitely something that would be interesting to explore.
Okay, and then my final question was this an expedited permit when you processed it?
No, it was not. The applicant actually filed it probably 2 months before we finished processing it because we kept going back and forth about some of our concerns relative to the neighborhood. I think one interesting scenario that occurred that I think someone will probably testify to from the citizens is the notification that the applicant did in this case that we thought was going to be good notification. Unintentionally, the way they sent the notification, they were sending it to homeowners associations for two buildings that are apartment buildings. That notification did get into the hands, from what we can tell, of the building managers for those two apartment buildings, but it does not appear that in both cases it was posted for neighbors to see. So,
but they're not required to mail to every mailbox?
They're not required at this point to mail. They can do hand notification. We don't have that requirement in the code. So it's not a requirement currently. We do the best we can to try and make sure that notification has gone out, and that's why when we had concerns from the feedback from the public that it went to a manager who wasn't posting it, that we tried to engage the citizens and let them know, if you do have a concern with what's been approved, here's what the conditions were, here's how you can appeal the permit. And so maybe not the best feedback loop, but it was the one that we tried to use in this case when we realized they may not have received the information they should have.
Paul, how often does the noise control board meet?
They meet once a month, but on average that usually turns into 9 or 10 meetings a year, not 12.
So in this instance, the letter we have in the appeal is dated September 24th. Could this matter have been heard in a more timely manner by the noise control board prior to this hearing?
Timeliness probably would have been similar, but it might have been a better way to not have the council reviewing something that the board might have been able to dispense with in an appropriate fashion.
Well, and I guess a factor for us to consider is how quickly can someone have an appeal heard so the matter doesn't become moot. But if you meet monthly, it is at least conceivable, depending on the timing, that a citizen would get a more prompt appeal before the noise control board than trying to navigate our calendar, right? And so and currently, it comes to your interpretation as it comes to us, it isn't the option of the appellant to pick the venue?
No, that's not written into code currently.
That might be,
no matter what,
might be another thing to consider, if it got a quicker answer to go to the noise review board. One other question. If I wanted to know how many times or how many variances have been issued to Safeway in the last 6 months, and in addition, whether any of them have been revoked, where would I go?
You would have a system that would be difficult to navigate. You could use Portland Maps, but what it would not do is do the greatest job of anything more than clicking on Portland Maps, finding out what permits have been administered.
And at what's the frequency with which the noise control board reports to council in the aggregate?
You usually don't get a report from the noise review board except for on challenging projects they're bringing forward, like the pile driving. So they're not currently, I may have misheard you, did you say the noise review board report to council?
Yeah.
I do not know of a situation where they've historically been reporting to council.
Well, this of course points out one of the marvels of our form of government, and it's not a criticism to you, but you know, it's not unusual for us to have an entity get on our calendar, come in, they've got a series of concerns. It might be some construction delays, it might be a water bill they disagree with, it could be a myriad of things, and where is that information? How does one access that so that we have a comprehensive view of managing that relationship? Again, our form of government probably works against that a little bit, but it may also help to explain sometimes the temperament of someone who comes to see us. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have even known to ask whether that there was a construction issue and a noise variance unless someone volunteered it. So good to know. I do know, by the way, when people complain about their water bill, but that not necessarily the noise variance.
Speaking of noise, any other questions for Paul? So obviously, we might have more later on, Paul. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so let's hear from the appellant, Mr. Benadia. Come on up. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I'm David Venadia, and I'm a Pearl District resident. The standard ordinance says that from Friday at 6 p.m. through Saturday till 7 a.m. the following Monday that we can usually expect, some quiet. And so that's what I'm really asking about. And in particular, I'm asking that this particular variance, which has, as you know, 10 Sundays of additional work that can be performed supposedly from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., I'm asking for that to be removed. And here's why. This is the neighborhood that I live in, and I live up here in the upper left corner with a smile face there, or the face, with my wife, and a bunch of other people live there as well. This is the housing in the area, so this is the North Pearl District. It's sort of the final frontier for the Hoyt development. The Parker just opened. You can see that's just below the Ramona, and that just opened last month, and people are starting to move in there. This is current construction in the area. So there's the Overton building, which we're referring to. The other ones up in the north part, there's the Abigail, which just broke ground. And so that's just started. So we just finished with the Parker. That was 2 years of construction noise. And now we have the Abigail starting. And here are the planned construction for the area. So just south of the Ramona, literally a stone's throw from our apartment, is the 1420 apartments, which is going to be starting in March. And that will also be a multi-year construction project. But specifically, we're talking about the Overton, and that is handled by Anderson. So Anderson Construction has kind of a unique situation in our neighborhood in that they have three full city blocks where they're building high-rises all at one time. And it's a little bit weird. But what's also interesting is that they have actually six city blocks under their belt. So they have parking, staging, storage, and construction. And what this does is it actually creates a lot of traffic. And so traffic being like big dump trucks or like tank-like crawly things that do all sorts of neat stuff and make sounds and smells, but also a lot of traffic, just general traffic, because there's a lot of employees and there's no public transportation in this part of the city yet. So every day we have lots and lots of cars coming and parking. And as the new construction begins, we're going to have even more. And we're still at the phase where, like, it's just kind of a hole in the ground. So as the buildings start to rise, you have more and more teams coming in doing more different things. And they're subcontractors who will come in for maybe a month or so, get their money, and go. And so there are people from outside the neighborhood coming in all the time. Now, when the noise variance application happens, if it was a rock concert, the noise control people would say, well, how many people are coming to the show? How long is the show? How loud is the show? But when it's a construction job, they just say, yeah, that looks okay. And they let it go through. And so we basically have a rock concert on every block every day for the next year. And it's difficult. But let's focus on the Anderson spot. So I started to notice this place on September 2nd because they started working at 5:30 a.m. and they woke me up. And so I thought, well, what do I do? I've been dealing with this construction for 2 years and I'm in this game. It's after 10. The city's website says after 10, call the police. So I called the police. And the police called me back about 40 minutes later, and he said, they probably have a variance. The policeman wasn't on site. He was calling from wherever off his cell phone. And I said, well, you're operating under the assumption that he has a variance, that they have a variance. And he said, 90% of the time we go out there and we tell them to stop, and they do what they want anyway, so he's not going to come and do anything. And then he asked if I was a renter, and I said, I'm a resident. And he said, but are you a renter? And he really pressed. He wanted to know if I was a renter. And I said, I am a renter. And he said, well, talk to your front office then. Well, I talked to my front office, and our office managers are great people, but they don't know anything about the whole sound situation and how that works. So I started contacting Anderson directly. And I have this little email exchange, which I'm not going to read through, but you can look at later. I asked him, like, hey, do you have a plan that I can look at so I know when you're going to be making noise? And they said, we have a noise variance that allows us to work through the night. But we take this seriously, you know. So I said, well, how do I access the details of that variance? And they said, well, which block is causing the noise? And I said, well, it's 13th and Overton, and they're out there again this morning. And they said, well, here's Pointland's noise variance website, which tells me how I could get a noise variance if I want. So I said, well, that really doesn't help me. Do you have a copy of your variance on your website? You know, I'm just trying to get the information. And by the way, you're out there again this morning. And there they were, September 5th, 6 a.m., loading a big metal thing onto a truck, which is the thing that their current variance says that they should take one of their Sundays to do. But they just responded and gave me this PDF that says this is the City of Portland regulations, which is the ordinance, you know. And so I replied and I said, well, based on that, you're breaking the law. And so they kind of, oops, you know, so they sent me to the next person up, who is the manager for Project Block 17, project manager. And he said, oh, we are sympathetic to now loud noise. We've been given a variance to work before 7. We apologize. Visit our Facebook page. So I visited the Facebook page, and the Facebook page for Block 17 is just an advertisement. You know, it says stuff like, things are going up. Look at these neat pictures of our great job. Anderson will say, well, we give a bulletin every week that tells you what's going on. Well, that bulletin doesn't really tell you what's going on. It'll tell you about road closings. It says that we're going to measure our sound, which I don't think they do because I'm out there in the mornings and I hear them. But what's more is this was for Block 17. It's not for the Overton, which was the site I was asking about. So if you want rainbows and pictures of their construction cranes, that's a great site. But I wrote back to them and I said, hey, please send me the details of the variance that you're telling me you have. And that's when they stopped responding. So that calendar is interesting because that was September 11th. Now, September 16th, their variance for the Overton site got approved. And I heard about it from Paul and the noise office on the 17th because I had been complaining. And because I had complained about that particular site, that gave me access to actually file this appeal. I had to do that, from what I read, within 10 days. And so the 26th would have been my 10th day. I got my appeal filed on the 25th. And lo and behold, on the 29th, after I would have been able to legally apply, that's when Anderson notified my building, in fact, that they got a noise variance. And this is what it looked like. We just got this thing in our little mailbox, and it's got like this stuff scrawled on it. And I don't know if you looking at this, if this makes sense to you right away, and if you flip through this, if it would be able to make any sense to you. It didn't me, and I'm sure my neighbors didn't quite understand it. I've since learned about it. When Anderson applies for their variance, they have to notify within a 2-block radius, all the people that are going to be affected, the noise receivers, the folks that are going to be hearing the noise that they generate. And so this is the 2-block radius. And who did they reach out to? Two places, the Ramona, my building, and the Sitka. Now, the management at the Ramona and the Sitka, great people. We love our management, but the management does not understand the process. Plus, when the noise person came to notify us, they showed up so early in the morning that they gave the information to the cleaning person. So our management didn't even know what was going on. Now notice all the other places, the Bridgeport where people own, the Wyatt where there are plenty of people in the Freedom Center, plenty of people living there that might have said, we don't want this or we want to have a say in this. So October 14th, early in the morning, 5:30 in the morning, I wake up and I hear noise. And basically, there was a video, but it's not playing. But I hear noise and I try to sleep through it. And I go out to see what's going on. So by the time I get out there, it's 6:43, and I take some video, and I send this video of them doing loading. They're loading out a big, looks like a generator, something they're supposed to be doing on one of their Sundays. That's what their variance is for. And I send that off to the noise control office. And it's like throwing it into a black hole, because there's one person there who can decide yes or no, this is actually a violation, and so nothing happens. October 15th, we get an actual phone call from our management that says, Anderson's hole blew its engine. They're going to be removing it tomorrow at 6 a.m. Now, during the week at 6 a.m., they shouldn't be working. For either of their variances, that's not within the variance. It's outside of the variance, and it's outside of the ordinance. So I'm not sure why they're even telling us this, and I'm not sure why we got a phone call. I'm guessing it's because I had been complaining. So on the 16th, they showed up at 5:04, and there's the truck, and they started working. Now, I have a video, and it's not going to play, unfortunately. But maybe I can, well, if you can, you have this presentation, and I would encourage you to please look at the video of this particular thing, because they make a lot of noise, and particularly they are sawing, like through steel. So 5:38 in the morning, you can see the Parker building in the background where people are just moving into the Pearl. They're all excited, $2,400 a month for their, you know, apartment. And then at 5:38, they're woken up by this. You know, Anderson will say, well, we want to be a good neighbor, but I don't think that's being a good neighbor. October 29th, this is just yesterday, I called and said, what can I expect next week for noise? And they said, expect a huge delivery at 5 a.m., probably won't make much noise, but we'll be closing the street. Now, a huge delivery at 5 a.m. of equipment, I know it's going to make a lot of noise. The noise hotline there also, by the way, is sort of it's sort of a joke. Well, the first time I called, somebody actually answered and said, we have a noise hotline, they said to somebody else. If you call after hours, you get a thing that says, please leave a message. So here we are. We live in this area. We're inundated with noise. It's a rock concert every day. And what I'm asking you, basically, is just to give us our Sundays back. Or if Anderson really wants to be a good neighbor, and they're not going to use their Sundays, as Paul said, anyway, why don't they just give them to us and let us have our Sundays? Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Any questions for Mr. Vanadia? Thanks for... We may have some more later, but go ahead, Steve.
Which is just, if you got to choose between all of Sunday or scaling back some of the hours the rest of the week, what would your preference be?
My preference would be all of Sunday, and the reason for that is because it's something that's easy to say. Neighbors and the community and the police can say, Sundays is a day off, and everybody can know that. If we have regulations that vary, like it's going to be certain days and certain times, the police won't support us. The police do not respond to this at all. We have no recourse. We can't go to the noise office. They're so slow to respond. The Parker building, which we fought with for 2 years, over 2 years of sending them photos and videos, we got two citations. It's like $200 and I think $500 or maybe $1,000. So at the most, the construction company paid out an extra $1,200 or $1,300 in fees.
Does the amount of, if there is going to be work on Sunday, does it matter what time the work is? I mean, is 9 a problem because some people like to sleep late on Sunday, or is it just sort of the whole concept of you just want a free day?
9 is a problem because in construction time, that means 7. And so if you go out in the Pearl District, and I urge you to take a walk through the Pearl unannounced, you know, in a weekday at 5 in the morning, and you will see cars showing up and people starting to get working, and so there's a lot of noise. So if they're going to show up at 9, I don't believe that. They're never going to show up at 9. They'll be there at 7 or whenever they want.
I have a question, sir. So you've taken the time to file the appeal, come here and given us an excellent PowerPoint and made your argument.
Thank you.
Let's say there's 1,000, just to make up a number, 1,000 people impacted by this variance. What is the appropriate mechanism for us to determine whether your preference is the consensus view in the community or whether it is the view of a single appellant?
Well, that's a good question.
I ask it with humility because
yes.
we have to sort of balance a number of things.
I would say listen to the testimonies of folks that live in the neighborhood, my you know, community that are here. I think that the reason I'm asking for that Sunday off idea, particularly with this site, is because it might be able to actually happen, which is kind of strange that I have to come and do an appeal to ask the city to just actually keep the original ordinance that we all have agreed on. So,
thank you.
Enough. Other questions? You might have some more later, and you have the opportunity to come back up if there's something you want to rebut. So,
thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you for your diligence.
So, let's take individuals who've signed up in support of the appeal.
And we have 5 signed up: Brooks Hickerson, Patrice Hansen, and Gwen Samsel. Will you come up, please?
Welcome.
Here we are again.
Yeah, welcome back.
Yeah. You know, this is getting to be a habit here. Okay. I'd just like to say I do support Dave Novotny's appeal. okay, and that I really would like to have Monday off, and you do have the power, you could just reject the noise variance, okay? That is within your power. And I really wish we had people here testifying from the Hoyt development, because, see, the way I understand it, they have not applied for a variance, and they are working. I can testify. They show up at 7 o'clock in the morning, not before, on Block 15. They work until 6. Once or twice, they've gotten into trouble and worked past 6, but that's it. They've never shown up on Sunday. Okay, so you can build a 28-story building in Portland, in the Pearl, without a noise variance. It says I have to work at 5:30 a.m. and I have to work on Sundays. It is possible, and what's interesting about the Hoyt development is they're using the same construction company, Anderson Construction. So Anderson Construction obviously knows how to do this too. It's a matter of the left hand not knowing what the right hand's doing. Okay, so I would like to encourage you to do that. I feel a 5 a.m. start. If I given a choice between the two, I would choose Sunday also. And I think you're getting a gist now for the problem of the review board, and I really think you should look at this process and the notification. Somehow sending a notice to every resident involved, at least if the impact more people, you send out more variances, more notices. And if there's just the through people, you don't have to do that. But anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Nice to see you again. I'm Patrice Hansen. First of all, I wanted to say that I do believe that if there was a better notification process for the people who would be impacted, then you'd have more of a feedback as to how many people are having a difficult time with the situation. But and I also wanted to comment on a couple of things that Paul said, because I think that this industrial zoning is kind of outdated for the area, because it's clearly a residential area. So I would think that that's an aspect that needs to be looked at, and the zoning should be appropriate to what is actually occurring. And he also mentioned the work hours of 7 a.m. to 6 p.m., but that's seldom a fact. I've actually gotten, my routine has turned out to be that I wake up about 5 in the morning, and I close my windows, and I put in my earplugs, and then I go back to sleep. And it's gotten to be my regular routine around that. So, yeah, definitely usually starts by 6 or before. And, you know, also that, you know, the situation that we're living in there is kind of extraordinary with all these buildings going up at once. So I feel like citizens really deserve some, maybe it's not even extraordinary consideration, but ordinary consideration in an extraordinary circumstance, and to at least have that Sunday off. It's kind of a sense of like, oh, it's so quiet, relief, you know? I mean, and I know the building is a big job. I mean, those guys are out there working, doing this amazing job, I mean, doing this incredible thing that I can hardly believe people can do it. You know, it's kind of interesting watching it. But, yeah, everybody's important. Everybody matters, and everybody needs to be taken into consideration. So I definitely agree with David.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
I'm Gwen Siemel. I'm David's partner. So I think that what's going on paper, the ordinance and even the variance, I think that it's great. Like, everything looks rosy on paper. The problem that we're talking about is in practice. We're talking about enforcement. The people ultimately who are enforcing the ordinance and the variance in practice right now are the same people who need to live up to those ordinances and variances. So it's the construction companies. And it's not working. I can tell you that from living with them. It's not working. So if you do call the police, which is one of the options, what you get is a dispatch that is at worst hostile, but at best reticent. They don't want to send anyone out. They say often, oh, they probably have a variance. You know, they're just not interested in getting into it. They have other things to do. And I get that. There are bigger problems, but this is a health issue. And after years of it and more years that are coming, we need to start doing something now. And that's what these Sundays are about. It makes it easy to enforce. If you're worried about, like, you know, 5 a.m. for this lot and, you know, whatever for the other lots, that's harder to enforce. If we can just put it out there that nowhere in the Pearl is there allowed to be construction work on Sundays. That's an easy thing for everyone to remember. The police can get behind it as well because it's easy to understand. You know, often the police don't even know the ordinance. You have to give them a printout of the construction noise ordinance. So the Sunday silent makes it easy to enforce. So that's the stopgap measure. That's the thing that will help us today. And then from there, we need to work on other enforcement issues like